Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So I'm very honored to be here with all of you. And in this series of verses, I'll discuss about how Krishna remembers Vrindavan long after he has left Vrindavan, when he is discussing the Uddhava Gita. He's instructing Uddhava. So these four verses are considered the devotional essence of the Uddhava Gita. So this and the next three verses, they talk about how Krishna is recollecting the residents of Vrindavan and what he recollects about them and how he appreciates their affection for him. Normally, love is seen through attention and recollection. Now, when someone is not there with us, at that time, how much we remember that person, that indicates that there is affection for that person. And when that person is there, how much attention do we pay to that person? That also indicates how much affection we have, how much love we have for that person. Suppose in a family, you know, husband is working somewhere else, in some other city, and the wife is staying in another city. So, say when the husband comes back home, and the husband tells his wife, you know, whenever I am there, I am remembering you. But when the wife is talking with him, the husband is sending some text message, looking here, looking there, the wife will say, when you are here, you are not even paying attention to me. So how can I believe that you are remembering me when you are not there? When I am not there in front of you. So, the attention, when someone is present, how much attention we give for them, that is an indication of our affection for that person. And similarly, when someone is away, or we are away from that person, how much do we recollect that person? That is also a measure of affection. So, love is thus expressed both in the presence and the absence of the object of love. And normally, when we remember someone, what we remember about that person is also very defining. That indicates, okay, if someone remembers, if you talk about, if we meet about some, if we meet some person, both of whom we have a mutual friend. He says, you know, he's a very helpful person. Now, if that person has not been particularly helpful with us, we may wonder, okay, why is he remembering that? So maybe he was helpful with that person, but not to me. So what we remember about someone also reflects the nature of our relationship, the nature of our interactions, and the focus within that relationship. So say, if I was going back to the early example, if father is away from home, the way a son or a daughter will remember the father will be different from the way the spouse will remember the father. And if that father has his own father, how the grandfather, the grandmother will remember, that will be different. Because the flavor of the relationship, the nature of the relationship also shapes the nature of the remembrance. So here, Krishna has left Vrindavan and apparently has left the gopis in great agony. And what Krishna remembers reveals the nature of their love for him and his love for them. So normally, whenever there is a relationship, relationships take time to develop. And after the relationship is developed, we hope the relationship goes on steadily. We know that there is ultimate termination of the relationship at death. But still, there is a hope that relationship goes on. In the movies and novels, they talk about HEA, happily ever after. Now, even if there is no ever after, but as long as there is after, you know, we want that the relationship should go on. And for the gopis in Vrindavan, they were young, they were looking forward to a life with Krishna, and suddenly one day, with no warning at all, Krishna just departed. And that was devastating for the gopis. So the first thing that Krishna remembers about the gopis shows that Krishna appreciates the magnitude of the agony that the gopis had to go through when he suddenly departed. Now, if we know someone whom we love is going to go away, is going to travel somewhere, is going to relocate somewhere, then we have some time to mentally prepare ourselves. We may have some cherished memories with that person, spend some quality time, have some heart-to-heart interactions, and then depart. Anytime, one of my friends is in hospice care, and he told me that many times when people are near the end of their lives, their body has come to what is called physical closure. The body is about to be destroyed. It is well on course to destruction. In fact, it should already be destroyed. But often such people live on if they don't have emotional closure. Emotional closure means that if elderly patriarch of a family has had, the son has quarreled with him and they have a very bitter relationship. Then the father who is now about to die, that father may want some reconciliation with the son. And then the soul is ordained to leave the body at a particular time. But within that, there is a little bit of, the soul holds on. And then there are many stories where the son comes back and then there is mutual reconciliation, mutual forgiveness. And then the soul can leave the body. So the emotional closure is often very important for the soul to leave the body peacefully. So there is a whole field of dying and how to help a person prepare for dying. In traditional India, many times when a person would know that I am now going to die, they would often leave their homes and go to some holy place, Vrindavan or Kashi, and they would just stay there on the banks of a sacred river and leave the body. And when they would do that, if they were living in a village, all the villagers would come to meet them. And they offer obeisances, offer respects, offer gratitude. And they knew this is going to be our last meeting. So there would be a mental preparation. So the point is, in any relationship, if there is no emotional closure, or at least if not a complete closure, at least a closure of a particular chapter. So if two friends are living together for a long time, and suddenly one friend has to go somewhere else for college or for a job, then the two friends would like to meet for some time. And then this chapter that we were always close to each other, this is going to end. Now we may have another relationship, but it will be a correspondence or by phone or whatever. It's a new chapter in the relationship. So relationships are often based on small gestures which are very important. So now, to the superficial worldview, it may appear as if Krishna just abandoned the gopis. That the gopis, they gave their everything to Krishna. And as soon as Krishna got the opportunity, this is a skeptical worldview, then I'll delineate that skeptical look at this and I will counter that in due course. So Krishna, he was in Vrindavan and he enjoyed whatever he could in Vrindavan. And as soon as the opportunity came for the big city life, Vrindavan is like a village, and often people who are in villages, they want to go to the cities and they think in the cities there is much more enjoyment. So Krishna enjoyed as much as he could in the cities. When he got satiated, got the first opportunity, he jumped that opportunity and left the village to go to the cities, and he never came back. So this is how Krishna deserted those who had given up everything for him. This is what some skeptics may think. But the reality is very different. And Shwafalkina Mayanuratta Chitta. You already said that. Shwafalkina Akrura, when he came to summon Krishna to from Vrindavan to Mathura, it was not that Krishna was eager to go. There are multiple reasons why Krishna had to go and multiple reasons why Krishna could not come back. And in fact, Jiva Goswami, in his Anandavan Champu, in his Gopal Champu, describes, based on the Vishnu Purana and other scriptures, how Krishna did indeed come back. And we will discuss that in our later classes. But suffice it to say, when Krishna departed from Vrindavan, what was the background over there? So that we will discuss in today's class in detail. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the most detailed description of Krishna Leela among the Puranas. It has 90 chapters. And among them, there's a rough division. The first 40 chapters describe Krishna's life in Vrindavan. The next 10 chapters describe Krishna's life in Mathura. And the last 40 chapters, they describe Krishna's life when he was based in Dwarka. But during this period, most of the activity that Krishna performed were not in Dwarka. Krishna was going to Kurukshetra, Krishna was going to Hastinapur, Krishna was going to meet devotees at various places. So Krishna's travels are described during his stay in Dwarka. Now, when Krishna lived in Vrindavan, at that time, Krishna's identity was not clear for anyone. What do we mean? That actually, Kamsa knew that Ashtam Garbha, the eighth womb, the eighth child of Devaki, would kill him. Now, actually, when the prophecy had come, it had used a gender neutral term, Ashtam Garbha, in the eighth child basically. Now, Kamsa had assumed that the eighth child would be a son, because he thought that he's a warrior, how can a woman kill me? So he thought it will be a man who will kill me. And when the eighth child was born and appeared, it appeared as if it was a woman. We know that Vasudev took Krishna to Vrindavan, and then Maya Devi, she was born to Yashodamai, and she came back and she was there as that child. And when Kamsa saw this girl, he thought, what is this? How can there be a girl? And he was a little undecided, but he thought, better let me not take it. Can he wanted to kill that? But at that time, she slipped away and she revealed herself to be Durga Devi. Now, Kamsa was shocked. What has happened? Then he concluded that, oh, alas, lying is not the way only of the humans, even the gods lie. So, the gods are simply threatening me. These were simply empty threats. I am so powerful that they had no power to kill me. They just empty threats were issued, and because of those empty threats, I killed 7 of Devaki's children. And then he actually expresses remorse and he seeks forgiveness from Devaki and Vasudev. And so he initially doesn't come to know that Krishna is anywhere else. And after that, as the time passes, his suspicious nature resurfaces. And he starts thinking that, you know, the gods are my mortal enemies. They would not just give empty threats like this. There must be some bigger conspiracy. They must have arranged that this child who was born, he must have slipped away somehow. Just couldn't figure out how he might have slipped away. But then he thought, yes, Vasudev and Nanda, they are friends. So maybe Vasudev's son is in Nandaga, in Vrindavan. And then with that suspicion, he started sending various demons. Now all along, he was not sure whether whoever is Vrindavan is actually the eighth son of Vasudev or not. But he felt there's some threat over there. Now suppose, say there is some desert area or forest area where there are some terrorists who are hiding. But it's a big place and you don't know where the terrorists are. And there's some place we attack and we are repelled. So if the security forces attack and they are repelled, there's some enemy over here. Whether that is the same enemy we are looking for, we don't know. But then as Krishna started countering all the threats that Kamsa was sending, he killed Putana, he killed Bakasur, he killed Yomasur, all the Asuras. As one by one, his strongest lieutenant started falling, Kamsa started feeling more and more clearly, this must be that being who was prophesied by the gods who would kill me. And as his conviction became stronger and stronger about it, his apprehension also became much deeper. He started becoming paranoid. He started feeling as if he was haunted by a ghost. The acharyas describe at how Krishna conscious he became because of fear. So eventually, by the time of 37, 38, 39, 40 chapters, when he summons Shvafalka was the father of Akrura. So his Akrura is referred by his patronymic connection as his father's son. So when he sends Shvafalkina, he sends Akrura there, He was so terrorized, Krishna will come and kill me, that when he was lying in his bed, when his wives would come there, he would think Krishna and Balaram have come. So, the acharyas describe that actually this indicates, is this Krishna consciousness? When you think of one's wife and remember Krishna, most people may not do that. Kamsa was doing that. So was he Krishna conscious? Yes and no. He was conscious of Krishna, but he was not conscious of Krishna with the intention to please Krishna. So this unfavorable Krishna consciousness is not considered bhakti. It is anukulena Krishna anushilanam bhakti ruttama. Rupa Goswami explains in Bhakti Rasam Sindhu that bhakti, high class bhakti is that which remembers Krishna with the intention of pleasing Krishna. Anyway, so by this time, the context, we are discussing all this because I am trying to understand what made Krishna suddenly leave Vrindavan. So Krishna, his identity as the prophesied nemesis of Kamsa had now become clear, at least to Kamsa. What about the Vrajavasis? The Vrajavasis, there was a very peculiar thing going on over there. When Garga Muni came to Vrindavan, Garga Muni was a priest of the Yadavamsha. And naturally, as a Brahmin sage, for him it was a matter of great joy and pride that in the dynasty which he was serving, the Supreme Lord had descended. And he wanted to see the Supreme Lord. Along with that, Vasudeva also felt that, you know, for my son, proper ritual should be performed. So, although Nanda Maharaj was also prosperous, but Nanda Maharaj's prosperity was pastoral prosperity. It was rural prosperity. Whereas, Vasudeva's prosperity was royal prosperity. So, he wanted Garga Muni to go and perform the birth rites for Krishna. Now, when Garga Muni came to see Nanda Maharaj, Garga Muni had a dilemma. On one side, he could not, he did not want to compromise the security of Krishna. He did not want Kamsa to come to know that, oh, it is Vasudeva's son who is born here. And because of that, what he did was, he actually did not directly tell Nanda Maharaj about the true identity of Krishna. He told Nanda Maharaj, Nanda Maharaj said, oh, it is my great fortune that you will come here and we also need your services. Please, can you perform the naming ceremony for my son? So at that time, Garga said, actually I would love to do that. But it is well known that I am the priest of the Yadu dynasty. And it is also well known that the heir of the Yadu dynasty has disappeared. So, if I perform the naming ceremony for your son, that another third factor was also that, relatively speaking, among these two, Nanda Maharaj was much older. Vasudeva was younger. In fact, Nanda Maharaj was of such an age that at that age, many times expecting a child is unlikely. So all these three factors Kamsa will put together. Since you are so old, you may not father a child at this age. And I am the priest of the Yadu dynasty, so I will probably perform the naming ceremony for the Yadu heir. And the Yadu heir has disappeared. So he will conclude by putting these three factors together that the boy who is here, he is the Yadu heir. And that will be very dangerous. Therefore he said, I cannot perform the naming ceremony. Then Nanda Maharaj thought about it and he said, yeah, all that you are saying is right, but still I feel providence is arranged for my son to be blessed by your holy presence. And I do not want this opportunity to go away. Actually, Garga Muni also did not want the opportunity to go away. But for a sage, what greater privilege can be there than to perform such a ritual for the Supreme Lord? So therefore, he desired it very strongly. But there was a circumstantial problem. So what he did was, Nanda Maharaj suggested that let us do the naming ceremony in not in my house, but we'll do it in a cow shed, so that it will be done low profile. It will be done discreetly. So when it's done discreetly, then what happens? Then the hostile attention may not come so much. And then after he did that, he had to show the horoscope. He had to look at the horoscope. And now he said he did not want to tell the truth, but he did not want to tell lies also. So what he did was, he told him, oh, your son has had many births. And in all births, he has been a great person. Now, of course, he is the Supreme Lord, but he did not want to tell he is the Supreme Lord. So he said, he is almost as powerful as Narayan. Actually, Krishna is the source of Narayan, so in a sense, he is more powerful than Narayan. And he also said, in a previous life, he was the son of Vasudeva. Actually, he is the son of Vasudeva in this life itself, but it's in the previous life. So in a sense, Krishna's life in Vrindavan and Krishna's life in Mathura, they are two separate lives. So in that sense, previous life is also true. The point I am making of all this is that Gargacharya practiced Achintya Bhedabhed. He spoke the truth and he did not speak the truth also. So Nanda Maharaj had this notion, yes, my Krishna, this is my son. It's not Vasudeva's son. And further, he used to think that he is as powerful as Narayan, not that he is Narayan. So whenever any Vrajavasis would come and ask him, how is this Krishna, small boy, how do you lift Govardhan up like this? So what did he reply? He said, yes, Gargacharya told me that my son is like Narayan. He's very poor. Don't say he is Narayan. Then finally, when Akrura came, so now Krishna was killing many demons, but none of the Vrajavasis consciously knew that Krishna is God. We'll discuss in the third verse whether the Vrajavasis actually knew Krishna was God or not. But at least consciously, they thought he's just a lovable Vrajavasi, the most lovable Vrajavasi. And they did not consider him at all the son of Vasudeva. So now, when Kamsa sent Akrura to Vrindavan, so he had multiple reasons. He thought that, I am sending one by one my demons, and I send my most powerful demons. I am not able to win. So the best chance for me to kill Krishna will be if I can get him into my camp. So one-to-one fight, we are not winning. So just like when the Kauravas saw that one-to-one, they were all defeated by Abhimanyu, then they attacked him 6-1. And by that time, Abhimanyu was exhausted and he perished. So Kamsa's plan was that if Krishna comes to my city, then I will have all my warriors with me and I will myself be there. So together if we attack, then Krishna will surely be killed. So his purpose was to kill Krishna. Now, Akrura, when he came to Vrindavan, and he first met Krishna and Balaram. Actually, Krishna and Balaram were playing outside, doing some work outside. They were small children at that time, just by the around the age of 10, roughly. Different acharyas are giving slightly different understandings of how old exactly Krishna was, Balaram was at that time. But suffice it to say, they were just children at that time, boys. And when Akrura saw them, he offered obeisances, and then they were welcomed to the house. And first he said, I would like to talk with you privately. Now, Vasudev, an uneasy feeling started, Nanda Maharaj, uneasy feelings started gnawing into his heart. Something is wrong. Suppose some unknown person comes to a house and tells the father, I want to talk with your son privately. The father, the mother will say, what do you want to talk with my son privately? Rather, you talk with me, then I will decide whether I will talk with my son or not. Isn't it? But after all, Akrura had made it clear, this was not a personal visit, this was an official visit. He had not come as a relative, he had come as a representative of the king. So they knew better than to thwart any of the designs of the king. Kamsa as a king itself had tremendous power, and Kamsa was further a tyrant, and provoking him would be a courting suicide practically. So they allowed him to talk. And then at that time, Akrura tells Krishna and Balaram, It tells Krishna actually you are the son of Vasudev. Now Balaram's identity as son of Vasudev is well known. But Krishna's identity was not known. So Krishna tells, oh really? No, I am the son of Balaram Maharaj. It's a very beautiful interaction where Krishna denies his connection to Vasudeva sometime. And then Krishna says, yeah, I think, you know, when I was small, I have some remembrance. I came across the river or something like that. Like small children, they remember something from the people grow old. The childhood, they may remember something. So, it's like if child was there for 2-3 years in one place and the parents relocate to some other place. And after that, the child goes back to that place, he says, I think I've seen this place, you know. Something, some vague memory is there. So, finally Krishna accepts that, yeah, if you say so, then it is true. And then Akrura says that, you cannot, now Kamsa has summoned you. And Kamsa has ill intentions. He has an evil motive. So, if it was only your safety that was of concern, I would have advised you not to go. But, if you don't go, Kamsa will send his whole army and attack you. And not only attack you, he will devastate the whole of Vrindavan. And Krishna starts thinking that when one demon attacks, I am dealing with the demon. But if a whole army attacks Vrindavan, it will be difficult for me. I can deal with the army. But, they may devastate Vrindavan in the process. They better let me go out of Vrindavan. And because Kamsa was such a temperamental tyrant, not only tyrant, he was a temperamental tyrant. You know, one day he will speak, oh, we are friends. Second day he will find you are in jail. What happened to friendship? It was utterly temperamental. So, that was how it was with Vasudev. You know, sometimes he would release him, sometimes he would arrest him. So, Krishna decided that I'll have to go to Vrindavan. So, Krishna left Vrindavan not because of the allure by any of the pleasures of the city. He left Vrindavan to ensure the protection of those whom he loved. And of course, that was the Vrajavasis. And those whom he loved were not just the Vrajavasis, they were also the Mathuravasis. Now, he knew I have obligation to the Mathuravasis also. Once he accepted that I am the son of Vasudev, then he recognized that I have an obligation to my parents. And they are suffering under the tyranny of Kamsa, so I have to protect them. So it was with an extremely heavy heart that Krishna left Vrindavan. And when he left Vrindavan thus, the gopis were devastated. They just couldn't tolerate the idea of Krishna leaving and going. And when the gopis, they were all night and the news started spreading, that oh, there is a messenger who has come from Mathura and he is going to take Krishna. All night the gopis were horrified and they were praying, let there be a storm, let there be an earthquake, let there be something which stops Krishna from going, let there be rains. They were hoping that nature will create some obstacle, and the nature did not create any obstacle. At that time they decided to make themselves the obstacle. Now they were hoping that at least Krishna, maybe he's just a child. The nature of love is that we never want to ascribe blame to our beloved. Now, even if someone has done wrong, if we love that person, maybe there must be some circumstances. He or she, they could not have done like this. Now, maybe there's some circumstances we don't know about. If we love someone, even if they have done wrong, we don't publicly ascribe blame to them. We acknowledge. Everybody can commit mistakes. No, when Yudhishthir lost everything and lost Draupadi, and Draupadi was to be dragged to the assembly, at that time Draupadi grabbed onto a technicality to try to protect her honor. She said that Yudhishthir, if he had gambled himself first and lost himself, and how could he have gambled me? If he's not his own master, then how can he be my master to gamble? So with this question, she forestalled the inevitable for quite some time. But eventually Dushasan came and dragged her to the assembly. And there she repeated the question. And then nobody in the assembly could answer. Bhishma said, actually, there are these two principles and I can't figure out which is higher. He says, a wife always belongs to the husband. And at the same time as a person who lost himself, a slave, that person doesn't own anything. So these two principles, I don't know which is higher over here. Therefore, I can't answer. And as this was going on, so Duryodhana, his great joy was in seeing the pain of his opponents. This is the nature of materialism. Now, spirituality means our happiness comes in loving and serving Krishna, and our happiness comes in helping others become happy in loving and serving Krishna. But in materialism, our happiness comes in seeing others miserable. Now, I saw advertisement once of a car. Purchase this car, the advertisement, this young man is driving a car and a girl is looking admiringly at him, and behind is a colleague, he is glaring enviously. So he says, buy this car, enjoy the envy in your neighbor's eyes. So what a standard of enjoyment, enjoying the envy in neighbor's eyes. It's a pathetic standard of enjoyment. So Duryodhana, he had his royal wealth and opulence, he did not get enjoyment over there. What he wanted to do was, that he wanted to see the Pandavas miserable. And he wanted to create dissension among the Pandavas. So he tells, apparently acting very magnanimously, he said, Draupadi, if you agree that by Yudhishthir, when he gambled you, he acted adharmically. If you proclaim that Dharmaraj does not know Dharma, that Dharmaraj acted adharmically, then I will release all of you. For Draupadi, this could have been a great temptation. She was about to be dishonored and she could have saved herself. But she was not concerned only of her honor. She was also concerned about Yudhishthira's honor. And she did not, so basically Duryodhana wanted to create a wedge between husband and wife. Now often there are political poisoning relatives who do that. They create fissions in good relationships. So Duryodhana was trying to do that. And what did Draupadi do? Draupadi did not fall for the lure. She said, no, if it had been left to Yudhishthira himself, what to speak of gambling me, he would not even have cast one dice in the gambling match. No, he gambled only because he was instructed by his elders to do so. Actually, the first time when Vidura came to Pandavas and said, Dhritarashtra has organized a gambling match, Yudhishthira said, why should we gamble? Gambling causes dissension. Gambling causes fights. We should not gamble. But Dhritarashtra was insisting. So, Draupadi, she said, that it is only because of the instruction of the elders that Yudhishthira has gambled. Therefore, it is for the elders to decide the propriety of what happened during this gambling match. So, she did not blame Yudhishthira. This does not mean that Yudhishthira did not do any mistake. From a transcendent point of view, whatever he did was by the will of the Lord. From the circumstantial point of view, certainly, the extent to which he gambled was wrong. But still, if someone whom we love has done something wrong, it is not that we join everyone else in throwing stones at them. No, we stand by them and we should defend them. So similarly, the gopis here, they did not want to blame Krishna. They were thinking maybe, Krishna is forced by Kamsa to go to Vrindavan. Go out of Vrindavan. They were hoping that if Krishna is somehow forced to go, then someone will stop. They thought maybe Nanda Maharaj will stop, Yashodama will stop. But then they came to know that Nanda Maharaj is also going. At one level they are happy, at least Krishna is not going alone, so somebody will be there going with Krishna. But then they thought, no, actually Nanda Maharaj should have stopped Krishna. They thought Yashodama will stop. Yashodama is crying, but she said Krishna has to go. Then they thought if no one else is going to stop, then we will stop. And then the gopis themselves, they lay down in front of the chariot. And when Akrura was driving the chariot, he was shocked. He had never seen anything like this before. Rows and rows and rows of gopis just lying on the ground. So Akrura thought, I am elder and I am very mature. But he said, this is out of my control. Krishna, you have to deal with this. So then Krishna got on the chariot and he consoled the gopis. And he said, actually there's some work for which I have to go and just come back soon. I promise you I'll come back soon. And Krishna spoke with such concern, such compassion, such conviction that the gopis' hearts were solaced that Krishna is not rejecting us. That there may be some circumstance because of which Krishna has to go, but Krishna has not forgotten us. Krishna has certainly not rejected us. And that itself gave them a lot of solace. And then they themselves, although there were tears in their eyes, And they were shaking off the tears so that they could see Krishna for the last time. They let Krishna go. They kept looking at the chariot till it forever disappeared into the horizon. And they kept looking on, even after that, hoping for at least one glimpse of Krishna. And although they reassured themselves that Krishna had not rejected them, but still, when Krishna said, I'll come back soon, and then Nanda Maharaj came back, they were so delighted. And then they raced out of their houses and they saw there's no Krishna who has come back. Their heart stopped almost. And Nanda Maharaj said, Krishna is going to come back later. And one day, 2 days, 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 year, 2 years, 1 decade, 2 decades, the gopis were waiting and their hopes were waning, but they never gave up hope. They felt, yes, maybe Krishna has rejected us. Krishna would not have rejected us. And they thought that maybe Krishna has replaced us. Krishna has found some other consorts in Vrindavan, in Mathura, that's why he left us. And when they heard that Krishna has got married, then they lost all hope that Krishna will come back. But Krishna remembers them. So the first thing that Krishna remembers here is that when I left them, what trauma they went through. You know, when relationships, if we just get the feeling that the other person understands me, that itself takes a lot of the pressure, the tension in the relationship off. Now, when we feel as if we are not understood by the other person, then we ourselves go out of control. You know, there is so much emotion churning within me, and what to speak of resolving the situation, you are not even understanding the situation. It becomes intolerable. Krishna reveals here that he understands the magnitude of the agony that the gopis have endured. And he's remembering that, and he is recollecting that, and he's speaking this to Uddhava. So, in a future class, I will discuss about the significance. In this class, I talk primarily about the significance of Krishna. Of all the things he could have remembered in Vrindavan, this is what he remembered. And what is the significance of this? Now, that Krishna is remembering this, when he is remembering it, and to whom he is remembering it, what is the significance of that? We'll discuss in our future classes. I'll summarize. Today I talked about how these four verses, they comprise the devotional essence of the Uddhava Gita. Because Krishna's heart, which is filled with love for the Vrajavasis, is being revealed over here. And we discussed how Krishna's departure from Vrindavan was sudden and devastating. Because the Vrajavasis thought that Krishna is just a Vrajavasi. They had no inkling that Krishna was someone else, belonging to someone else. And especially the gopis had no idea. And Kamsa, as he became more and more convinced that, initially thought that the gods had lied, but then he became convinced that it was Krishna who is that my nemesis. And he saw that he is killing whoever I am sending to kill him. So he decided to draw him out and have all his forces attack him at one time. That's why he wanted to get him to Mathura. And he, because he was a tyrant and he was a temperamental tyrant, so Krishna felt that for the safety of the Rajavasis, I have to obey Kamsa's summons. And that's why he went, not because he rejected the Rajavasis, but because he protected the Rajavasis. And the Vrajavasis, especially the gopis, they tried their very best to keep Krishna there. And when they could not, their heart went with Krishna. And their heart was shattered and Krishna did not come back. And Krishna remembers the magnitude of the sacrifice and the magnitude of the misery that came from that sacrifice for the Vrajavasis when he left and he did not come. And subsequently, what Krishna remembers and how he appreciates, we'll discuss in our future classes. Are there any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Why is the Srimad Bhagavatam, like you said, broken into 40 chapters in Vrindavan, 10 chapters in Mathura, and then 40 chapters in Dwarka? Why is that?
So why is the Bhagavatam broken into chapters according to different places? The 10th canto basically narrates Krishna's pastimes, and more or less his whole life is being described over there. The Bhagavatam from the 3rd canto onwards is like the history of one day of Brahma. So from the 3rd canto to the 7th canto is the description of the events in the one day of Brahma, within that in Swayambhu Manu's. So during Swayambhu Manu's reign, whatever were the events that happened, especially in terms of which all avatars descended, that is described in the 3rd to 7th canto. In the 8th canto, from Swayambhu Manu to Vaivasvat Manu, there is a fast forward. And then Vaivasvat Manu, what all events happened in his Manvantara, that is from the 8th canto to 12th canto. So among these, because Parikshit Maharaj, Shukadeva Goswami is serving Parikshit Maharaj, and he wants Parikshit Maharaj to be absorbed in the Supreme Lord. And the Supreme Lord's manifestation with whom he is most related, Parikshit Maharaj is most related, is Krishna, because Krishna was the beloved Lord of his grandparents. And that's why now the Bhagavatam describes Krishna's pastimes in detail. And more or less it's chronological. So that's why the first 40 chapters are about Mathura, about Vrindavan, next 10 about Mathura. And afterwards there are about the other places. Now some of them are not chronological, and Jiva Goswami in his Tasham Timpani describes where the chronology is transcended by the spontaneous recollection that Shukadeva Goswami is having. But the idea is, because the overall Bhagavatam is a chronological description, and that's why the Bhagavatam more or less chronologically describes Krishna's pastimes. And he was first in Mathura, first in Vrindavan, then in Mathura, and then in Dwarka. That is also chronologically described. And there is no formal division as such. It's not that there is any delimitation at the end of 40 chapter, that it's not Evam Mathura Vrindavan Lila Sampurnam. It's not like that. It's an analysis which we can make to understand the structure of the Bhagavatam. Is that clear? Any other questions? Yes. Hare
Krishna. By hearing about Krishna leaving Vrindavan, and how you were mentioning that later on the gopis eventually lost hope, but still they held on to Krishna, in meeting with the materialistic mind, we understand or we feel that what's the that feeling of agony is not what I want to experience, because we have that material conception. So could you please explain what is it that the gopis felt for Krishna that made them the topmost devotees of Krishna? And is there any hope for us to experience spiritual happiness in that way, because it's just not materially understandable? Mm.
So the gopis, when Krishna left Vrindavan, they lost hope, but somehow they kept holding on to Krishna. They went through great agony. So, this agony doesn't seem many way relishable at all. And even the gopis can sometimes lose hope. Then what is the hope for us in our practicing bhakti? As I started the class by explaining that love is both through expressed through both attention and recollection. And in a sense, love in separation is love intensified manifold. I'm going to speak this elaborately in a later class, but I'll just mention it briefly, that separation does to love what wind does to fire. If there is a forest fire, here there are bushfires often in Australia. So if there is a big fire and if there is stormy wind at that time, what will happen? The fire spreads. So like that, for the gopis, their love for Krishna was like a blazing forest fire, and separation from Krishna was a stormy wind, and that intensified their love much, much more. And in fact, Krishna himself, at various places in the Vidagdha Madhava, Lalit Madhava, various places, Krishna explains how the intensity of the absorption in his remembrance that the gopis had, that is unparalleled. And that absorption in Krishna is what defines the gopis as the highest devotees. Now, of course, we shouldn't think that, okay, if I become separated from devotees, my devotion will also increase. No. We have to think, same metaphor applies in another way also. If there is a stormy wind, and instead of a fire, we have a candle. The candle will get extinguished. So our love for Krishna right now is like a candle. So it's not like a blazing forest fire. So if we go away from devotee association, our affection often gets weakened, often extinguished. So we need association very much. But the principle is there that love, so the separation can intensify love. And because the gopis' love was intensified so much, that's why they are considered the exalted devotee. And when we say they lost hope, now they lost hope does not mean that they gave up on Krishna. They always loved Krishna, but the thought that maybe Krishna will never come back. If they had completely just lost hope, you know, they could have very well given up their bodies. So there is a beautiful prayer in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Radharani says that Krishna, from the moment you left me and went away, since my body has become like a blazing forest fire. And this forest fire of separation from you, my soul is burning. And I am like if an animal is trapped in a cage and the cage is set on fire. The animal is scorched from all sides. The only hope for the animal is to somehow open the bolt of the cage and rush out. What? Says like that, Krishna, the only relief for me when I am burning in separation from you is that I give up this body. But your words that I will come back, your words I will come back are like the bolt to the cage. Because you said you will come back, and if you come back and I am not there, then you will feel disappointed. I want to be there to serve you when you come back. And for that sake, I live on. So all the gopis were in great agony, but still they lived on because they wanted to serve Krishna when he came back. That's what makes them exalted devotees. And as far as our sadhana bhakti is concerned, now we need to have around us association that gives us hope and encouragement. We need those devotees who understand us and those who guide us and especially encourage us. Because all of us will at different times slip, fall, and at that time someone has to lift us up. If we don't lift us up, then we will often lose our faith and lose our hope. We may give up the practice of bhakti. If a devotee lapses and falls, should say that, you know, it's like a soldier fighting on a war getting wounded. Now a soldier who is wounded needs to be sent to the hospital, not to the prison, isn't it? Now, sometimes if devotees have some difficulties, they will become very judgmental. Oh, this person has fallen away, this person has gone into Maya, this person has deviated. Now that is like somebody who has become wounded. Everybody struggles with their faith, everybody struggles with their desires and temptations. Somebody gets wounded. A wounded person is to be taken to the hospital, not to the jail. So if somebody has some problems in spiritual life, we should not judge them and condemn them. Rather, we try to help them in whatever way we can. And when we say we should, we also have to find out in our devotee circle, who are those devotees who are going to judge us and condemn us, and we keep a distance from them. And those devotees who understand us and encourage us, those are the association we should cherish. Even if you have one devotee like that, that itself can help us to move onwards in our spiritual life through a substantial amount of storms. So our hope comes from Krishna, our hope comes from the spiritual master, our hope comes from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the Mahavadanyaya avatar. But all that mercy needs to also manifest to us in a way that is accessible. And often that accessibility means that we do need to remember their mercifulness, but we also need someone in the devotee association who understands and cares for us. Does it answer your question? Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. So, is that episode of Gopi's separation only present in Krishna's family, or it happens here?
Okay. So Gopi's separation of Krishna, is it only in Bhavamalila or is it in Dwarka, in the spiritual world also? No, in spiritual world, Krishna and the gopis are eternally united. There is, in the Jiva Goswami in the Brahma Samhita commentary describes that the spiritual world, there is Golok, there is in Goloka, what you say, there is Dwarka, there is Vrindavan, there is Navadvipa. So, Krishna is present in Dwarka eternally with his queens. Krishna is present eternally with the gopis in Vrindavan. So, there is no separation. Of course, there is separation in the sense that Krishna is not always with the gopis. And even for some time when Krishna goes away to perform some other pastime, the gopis do feel separation from him. But this lifelong separation that was there when Krishna left Vrindavan and went away, that is not there in the spiritual world. Okay? Yeah. Hare Krishna.
Would I add something to the concise question about the language of this
guy? Yeah, please.
You can see that, I don't know, traces of that feeling of awaiting for Krishna to arrive can be seen in human psychology as well. Like often the things we don't have the way we expect them, the pleasure of gaining those things is much greater than things that come easy. And because like you're asking for the anguish, the separation, it seems like a suffering. Often we see things from a spiritual world reflected here, that often in human psychology, the things we don't have, we actually idolize, but once we have it, we lose interest in, you know, so that separation is also sort of the expectations is also present in our human psychology.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Often like they've done experiments and often the I think the Friday is the best day of the week because people expect what's going to happen on Saturday. The whole expectation makes it the best day of the week. So the separation is always here.
Yeah, it's true. So does separation from Krishna increase the anticipation of uniting with Him, and that way there's intensification of devotion? Yeah, that's very true. Prabhupada talks about this in Krishna book also. That when we don't have something, cherish it and get it, then we treasure it. So there are two aspects to this. When we say that the spiritual world is reflected in the material world, there is some truth to it, and there is also some element which doesn't, the reflection doesn't work out accurately. In this world, it often works out that when we expect something for a long time, then when we get it, it often turns out to be an anticlimax also. Because the things of this world don't live up to the expectation. And then later on we hold on to them, not because they are so good, but simply because we had sought them so much, we feel they must be good. So so although this longing is not realized in the material world, the very presence of this longing comes from the soul's longing for Krishna and that original relationship with Krishna. So in this world, anticipating something and getting it may not always lead to satisfaction, but with Krishna, actually there is satisfaction in the remembrance of Krishna. So that remembrance of Krishna can be when he is in separation and it can be when he is in union with Krishna. In both cases, because there is remembrance of Krishna, there is satisfaction. So it's in that sense, it's not like this world. Like suppose I have a craving for sweet rice, feeling separation from sweet rice. Now, just thinking of sweet rice does not give me any satisfaction. Actually, it causes dissatisfaction. It is only when I get the sweet rice and it is really good that I might get some satisfaction. But in the case of Krishna, his recollection, remembering him, his remembrance is not different from him at one level. And that's why, even when we remember Krishna, in the anticipation also, there is the fulfillment. Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharya has explained that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would perform in Srivasangam, the Harinam Sankirtan, that is considered Rasasthali. Now in this Rasasthali, how can we have Rasalila without Krishna being present? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is at one level of Krishna, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not in the mood of Krishna, he is in the mood of Radharani. So where is Krishna present? Krishna is present as the holy name. The Holy Name infuses everyone with the remembrance of Krishna, and that itself gives great ecstasy. So, in the recollection of Krishna also, there is at one level union with Krishna. Of course, the gopis do not cherish that level of union. They want the direct union with Krishna also. And that is what makes their craving so intolerable for them. So, the gopis are not satisfied. In the Damodar Ashtakam also, Sanatana Goswami's commentary says, that in the 4th and the 5th verses, Damodar Ashtakam is saying, let me remember you. Let me become absorbed in remembering you. But in the sixth verse he says, Edhyakshi Drushya. Previously he says that, please let me be flooded with your remembrance. But then he says in the sixth verse, I want to remember, see you with these eyes. And Sanatana Goswami says, this is a higher desire. That to remember the Lord is great, but a devotee also knows that to see the Lord directly is a special benediction, and he is desiring that also. So the gopis, then the gopis' relationship with Krishna, there is both these dynamics. There is separation, at that time there is recollection. There is union, that time there is recollection. And the gopis cherish the recollection that is there in union. And yes, when Krishna does come back, as Jiva Goswami describes, at that time all the gopis' desires are completely and eternally fulfilled. And all the agony of separation that they went through, it all becomes worth it. Because now they have got Krishna forever with them. Thank you very much. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki, Dai Gaur Premanandi.
Hare Hare Go. Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Namo Vishnu
Hare Krishna. Just a quick announcement that Chaitanya Charitamrita also has authored many a series of books, as you can see there on the table next to Srila Prabhupada. Here's the interesting thing, there's only a few copies, so those who are interested can come to the table, and I think Dira Lalit or Ganesham Prabhu will be there for the table, so you can talk to Ganesham Prabhu and you can purchase your copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita's books. Personally, I'm reading Idol Worship or Ideal Worship, and I've only entered the book, but it's already a fantastic conversation between two personalities that explains between, you could say, a person who is trying to explain what deity worship is all about and what the deity is, who he is. Very fantastic book. And the rest of the books also, they've inspired many, many youth and many, many persons into devotional service. So if you get a chance, please get your hand on one of those books and speak to them.
Yeah, thank you. There's one book which is on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of ISKCON's establishment, small book about Prabhupada, which is a picture book, Prabhupada's whole life, how he travelled and preached and spread Krishna consciousness. It's meant to be a very accessible introduction to Prabhupada's life for especially new people. Lilamrita is a wonderful book, but it's a big book. This is a book which, if you give to a relative or acquaintance, they can read the whole book in 1 hour and they'll get a inspiring understanding of Prabhupada's Prabhupada's contributions in this world. So this is the book. So this is basically, we have a picture on one side and a description of that incident. So basically there are 50 incidents from Prabhupada's lives that are described, and it's a very easy read. In fact, this was the first print. In the second print, the ISKCON Communications is going to endorse this book as a recommended book for distribution during the Prabhupada centennial. So that print I don't have right now, because this book is still available. But if you want it, you can take this book, and it's a very easy way to further appreciation of Prabhupada among people who may not yet appreciate him. Thank you.
Just handling of Prabhu's classes. So Prabhu will be giving a program. Prabhu will be in a program in Hornsby.